What's going on, everyone? This is the Fantasy Playbook Podcast. My name is Kyle Yates, and I am your host. I can be found on Twitter at KyleYNFL. I am joined today by Alfredo Brown. He can be found on Twitter at the Pretend GM. He is of Football Guys and the Fantasy Playbook. Alfredo, how are you today, my friend?
That feels awesome to hear. I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling good. Super excited to go on this adventure with you, man, and start here at the Fantasy Playbook. It's going to be quite the wild ride.
It's fun, man. I'm excited to bring you on board here and expand. We'll talk about that in just a second. Make sure to follow the show over on YouTube, youtube.com/thefantasyplaybook. We are on Twitter and Instagram as well at @_theffplaybook and on TikTok at @theffplaybook. You can find content going up there every single day. So if you're on Twitter, if you're on Instagram, make sure to jump over there. YouTube, hello, YouTube audience. All right, Alfredo, we talked about this, man. I'm excited to bring you on board here. I want to get right to this and saying what is coming up here at the Fantasy Playbook. You are stepping in as the new host of the Fantasy Playbook Dynasty podcast. This is going to be so much fun. Why don't you let everyone know what they can kind of expect with that new podcast coming out?
Oh man, we have so many cool things. I've got a really great rotation of guests. You, sir, are actually going to be the first guest on the show as the guest co-host for episode number one. Then we've got an awesome rotation of people that I've recorded with before, and then some brand new faces and voices that maybe not everyone's heard. So it's going to be awesome. I come from a scouting background of scouting college football players. So naturally, Dynasty Fantasy Football was a really good fit for me. I love it. We're going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff, talking trades, finishing up the mock draft season going on. And then, I mean, throughout the year, we're going to have awesome content coming to you every single week.
Absolutely. This was something that I wanted to invest in and create because throughout the NFL season, I'm not going to be able to pour much time and resources into Dynasty. And if there is someone in the industry whose opinion I trust very, very highly in Dynasty, it is Alfredo Brown. So I'm excited to listen to these episodes as they come out here. Make sure to head over wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find it on Google Podcasts, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever. Go and listen to the teaser episode of the Fantasy Playbook Dynasty podcast. Hit that subscribe button, leave a 5-star rating and review. New that will be coming out here very, very soon. Additionally, guys, make sure to start preparing for your fantasy football draft this year by going over to the ffplaybook.com/memberships and signing up for the premium content that you can find over at the website. That is my redraft rankings, my sleepers, breakouts, bust values, high upside players, bounce back players. There's a ton of content, top 100 player notes, in-depth analysis there for you guys to find over at the ffplaybook.com. Support the show, get ready for your fantasy football draft this year by going over to the ffplaybook.com and signing up for that premium membership. All right, Alfredo, let's get into this, man. We actually had an entire like section of the podcast planned for today that we were going to get into doing some like fantasy football award predictions. We're not going to be able to get to that because so much news has happened since the recording of the last podcast as the NFL world is really speeding up here. So let's get into some of the latest news and notes here from around the league as we move into this next week. All right. So looking back, Thursday, we recorded the podcast, and then afterwards, late at night, DK Metcalf signed a 3-year, $72 million contract extension with the Seattle Seahawks. I want your thoughts here as to how we should be valuing DK Metcalf this year in Seattle with Drew Lock, Geno Smith as a starting quarterback, and then also from a long-term perspective, how this plays out in Dynasty.
Yeah, I think last year we kind of got a very small sample size, right? And you can't just extrapolate every, you know, little section of 3, 4, 5 week data. But DK Metcalf was actually pretty good with Geno Smith. When I say pretty good, I'm talking like he was top 5 wide receiver good during that time. I'm not suggesting he's still going to have that kind of value going into this year, but he's dropping down to like the wide receiver 24 in average draft position. And I get it. The Seahawks probably aren't going to be very good. DK Metcalf is still very, very good. He's still very talented. At some point, like he just becomes a value. So I think that he's still going to be a great value if he's one of those guys you can get him maybe later in your drafts, talking middle rounds. And going forward, we see that the Seahawks are committing to DK Metcalf. They're not just, you know, tearing it all down, going into this full rebuild mode after losing Russ. So it's going to be very interesting to watch. Pete Carroll is a crazy person. So I'm very curious to see where they're going with this.
All right, from DK for redraft perspective, this is something where you got to kind of balance out the efficiency and what Geno Smith and DK Metcalf were doing last year and kind of predicting that moving forward. Also, kind of looking at the situation here this year, I think we're going to see them control the pace of play. I saw someone put out on Twitter just recently, and I can't remember who it was, otherwise I would mention it, saying, well, if we had Cooper Kupp going down to John Wolford, or, you know, one of these other top tier wide receivers going and experiencing a quarterback downgrade, would we be downgrading those wide receivers all the way to the wide receiver 24, 25, 26 off the board? And I think it's a little bit different than that, because with Wolford, with a quarterback downgrade, with some of these other top tier wide receivers, we would still see the offensive ecosystem. We would still see the pace of play being, you know, the high pass volume. In Seattle, we don't know what that's going to look like this year. This could be a team that is at the bottom of the league in overall plays ran at the end of the year because they just want to control the clock. They want to try to, you know, ease things up on their defense. They want to run the football and then throw it when they need to. And I think that that's going to take away from the overall volume that DK Metcalf has. I'm not as scared off of DK because of Geno Smith or Drew Locke. It's certainly a downgrade from Russell Wilson, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, it's also taken into account the fact that this offense could be very, very limited in its overall plays ran. That's something to take into account as we look at DK Metcalf. From a dynasty perspective, from my end, this is something where we got to see what's going to happen next year before we confidently move Metcalf back up the dynasty rankings, right? Because is Pete Carroll going to be the head coach next year? Do they bring in an offensive mind here? Do they draft a Bryce Young, a CJ Stroud with their record next year? There is a path for DK Metcalf to get back up into top five dynasty wide receiver status. You're going to have to live throughout this year, though, and the ups and downs. That's something to keep in mind here as we look at Metcalf moving forward. Would have been better if he had been traded and ended up in a, you know, a more proven situation with an offensive mind, with a top tier quarterback. Not going to happen, though, so we kind of have to wait and play this one out from a dynasty perspective. Some other news here. Devontae Booker is working out for the New York Giants. He spent time with their with that coaching staff with Jason Garrett and Joe Judge last year. New coaching staff in town this year, but was still on the free agent market. So working out for the team here to add some depth there to New York. Darius Slayton is working with the second team offense in Giants training camp, while Wandale Robinson is standing out. This was noteworthy to me because I just haven't known what to do with this wide receiver core and where Robinson fits in it. He's got the top 50 draft capital to his name. Just didn't know exactly how that was going to work with Kadarius Toney, with Kenny Galladay, with Darius Slayton, with Sterling Shepard. There's a lot of mouths there to feed, but Robinson is making the most of his opportunity. I think he does deserve to be moved up the rankings just a little bit. Robert Woods, the wide receiver for the Tennessee Titans, hopes to be ready by week one, coming off of his ACL injury. And Travis Etienne continues to shine in Jaguars camp. Alfredo, I want your thoughts on this one. Travis Etienne has been making some noise down in Jaguars camp. What are your expectations for him this year?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Travis Etienne a little bit more in this episode, but I love him. I love him. For those of you out there that are fans of DeAndre Swift and you like the way he's used in that Detroit Lions offense, expect something similar with Travis Etienne. You may not get, you know, the 18, 20 carries a game. Obviously, Doug Peterson's never been known for that, but there was times where he was using Miles Sanders as a guy getting a lot of volume. Travis Etienne, arguably more talented than him, a better receiver than him. That's a fact. He's a better receiver right than him. And he's got that chemistry already with Trevor Lawrence. And as a Miami Dolphins fan, I've seen what it's like when a quarterback gets his college teammate and he has that comfortability with him, that chemistry. It just works, man. I love Travis Etienne for this year in redraft. I still think that he's a value. And for dynasty purposes, man, I just love him long term.
I think with the James Robinson news that he was, you know, working back here, getting ready to come back onto the field here, working back from his Achilles injury, I think that bumped ETN's ADP down just a couple of spots. It created someone to just Perfect. Be a little bit, you know, I think that that's creating a value here for Travis Etienne moving forward. Russell Gage is back on the field here in Bucks camp and is impressing. I wanted your thoughts here with the Julio Jones signing, how this all works with Chris Godwin coming back, Mike Evans into the fold. What are your thoughts here, particularly with Gage and how he fits in this wide receiver core?
Yeah, I think that there was a very specific plan for Russell Gage, right? When they went out and they signed him, Tom Brady is the one, you know, it's always been talked about that he's been the one that recruited him out there. They had a very specific plan for him to be in that slot role and to be able to flex out wide if Godwin's the one going into the slot. And really, we don't know what Godwin's health is going to be like. I still like Russell Gage. I think his upside now gets a little bit more limited. Especially for touchdown upside. But
right.
I mean, Julio was being talked about as kind of replacing the Gronk red zone touches, which is just like, it's just weird to think of a, you know, 30-year-old, 6'4", 200, whatever pound guy to be used as like a tight end from wide receiver and more of almost like a gadget guy. Like that's just kind of odd that that's how they're going to use him. So I don't think even the Bucks quite know how they're going to use Julio, but there was always a plan for Russell Gage. And I think that the floor is going to be there for Gage. And if Godwin can't come back or Julio can't stay healthy, the ceiling becomes really high for Russell Gage, who becomes one of those mid-round values.
I love the way that you're talking about that. With Russell Gage, there was always a plan for him. With Julio Jones, he was still out there on the free agent market in late July. It's like, why wouldn't we sign Julio Jones? If we're making this push for a title and Julio's willing to come, you know, chase that ring with us here, yeah, he could be our wide receiver four. He can make some splash plays for us here or there. But there are people that are talking about Julio Jones as a top 30 wide receiver, a top, you know, like a proven asset week in and week out for your fantasy lineup. I just can't get on board with that. It bumps Gage down the rankings a little bit for me. Like you said, it hurts that overall upside, but I still think that he is the wide receiver three on this team, not Julio Jones. Van Jefferson, the wide receiver for the Los Angeles Rams, has been dealing with a knee issue and will see a specialist today as we were recording this here on Monday. Worth keeping an eye on here because that could create an opportunity for Odell Beckham to come back when he is healthy, or looking at another one of these free agent wide receivers there to take that Van Jefferson role if he is expected to miss significant time. Deebo Samuel signed a 3-year extension worth up to $73.5 million with $58.1 million guaranteed. Crazy. 3 years extension, 3-year extensions for both DK Metcalf and Deebo Samuel here. What were your reactions? What were your takeaways here from a redraft and dynasty perspective with Deebo Samuel signing this extension?
Okay, so let's start out with the redraft portion of it, right? I still think that, well, first of all, let's just get this out there. Super happy for Deebo Samuel. Incredibly talented player. There is no next Deebo Samuel. He's the only Deebo Samuel.
Right.
However, I'm a business owner outside of all this stuff, and I'm thinking of this from a business perspective. It's not good business to give a player a ton of guaranteed money and then say, all right, we're going to keep giving you 60 carries a year, roughly. I think that rushing volume goes down, but that doesn't necessarily mean that his fantasy value changes. It just means that they're going to have to find new and creative ways to use him. Kyle Shanahan's a very creative coach. If anything, he could potentially become more valuable because he's getting more of those downfield throws with Trey Lance. He's getting some of those quick play passes out of the RPO. There's going to be a lot of new wrinkles to this offense that we've never seen before. So, I don't know that the contract really moves me one way or the other with Deebo in terms of his redraft value. For Dynasty, so much of that is going to hinge on Trey Lance. If Trey Lance sucks at throwing the ball and the volume just changes for this team, the next 3 years could be really weird for Deebo Samuel and the Niners. But from a talent perspective, from a contract perspective, the commitment is there. Deebo Samuel's a great player. This is probably not the answer you're looking for. I'm still so just lukewarm on him.
I think it all comes down to, for me with Deebo, like I still have him as a top 10 wide receiver for, you know, redraft purposes this year. But for me, there's a little bit of caution when I'm hitting that draft button on Deebo because of the injury history. There's something here where Deebo last year remained pretty healthy. Like, and that was kind of an outlier throughout even his time at South Carolina in college and moving into the NFL, he's missed time. So this is something too, where if you are drafting Deebo, you're going to get some big weeks. He is one of the most talented wide receivers and players and playmakers in the entire NFL. But you do at least have to keep this in mind, where the injury history could be something where it could play into where exactly you feel comfortable taking him in your draft. Deshaun Watson. Let's spend some time here. Earlier this morning, we got news that Deshaun Watson has been suspended for the first 6 weeks of the 2022 NFL season. Now, this has been over a year and a half waiting for the Deshaun Watson saga to come to a close. From the moment that he requested the trade from the Texans in January to now, we finally have the clarity. He has been in limbo in dynasty rankings up to this point. People have just continuously said, well, we don't know what to do with Deshaun Watson. We now know. So there's a lot of stuff that we can talk about. We could probably fill an entire podcast talking about the stuff outside of the fantasy landscape, right? We could talk about the logistics of that and share our opinions. I don't think that that's super beneficial in what people are here for. I want to talk about the fantasy fallout here. I want to talk about what this does in the redraft rankings and the dynasty rankings for Deshaun Watson. Let's focus in on the redraft perspective here. Where did Deshaun Watson move in redraft rankings for you? Where are you comfortable taking him in drafts this year, knowing that he's going to miss the first 6 weeks of the season?
Yeah, I think that the redraft rankings don't really change much for anyone. Like, right, if most people were expecting this. This was something that was already baked in. We're seeing it with Alvin Kamara and his value and his rankings right now that, you know, people are worried about suspension. So not much changes. I think it being a 6-game suspension is even less than most people expected.
Right.
And we're going to have to wait and see here what happens. Does the NFL appeal this ruling?
Right.
As of right now, nothing is imminent. We have no idea. So there's just so much to unpack here, man. So much to unpack here, like just mentally, emotionally, all of it. From a fantasy football side, I don't know that I want to hitch my wagon to Deshaun Watson. I don't. You could say all the stuff you want about like feeling good about the players on your team, but even just from a logical, statistical standpoint, he's going to miss 6 games. When he comes back, he's starting with a brand new team, a brand new offense that's typically always been run heavy. I don't know what to expect of him when he does play and he is healthy,
right,
and he's been comfortable. He's a very good quarterback. This suspension kind of just keeps him exactly where he's always been for me in redraft. Does not change a thing.
For me, I updated projections and my rankings earlier today, landed at QB 29 on the year for me, knowing that he was going to miss 6 weeks of the season, right? When you're projecting and kind of statting everyone out, you're projecting them to play all 17 games. So knowing that, Deshaun Watson landed at QB 29 in my rankings currently. There's, you know, there's still some wiggle room there, but in one QB formats, not going anywhere near him. You know, like you're not drafting Deshaun Watson and holding him onto the bottom of your bench. It's been over a year since we've seen this guy on the football field. So we have no idea what he's going to look like even when he does come back. So from a redraft perspective, in a one QB format, like QB 29, not really looking his way. I might throw some fab on him when he's coming up on the end of that suspension, see if I can get him onto my roster if I am in need of a quarterback. In super flex formats, nothing more than a QB 3. You're really like a QB 2. You want those guys that are going to be stalwarts on your roster. You know what you're going to get. And then you can kind of throw that dart with Deshaun Watson late in your draft if his ADP holds. It's going to depend on, as we get further into August, seeing what that ADP does, how it shifts, how it fluctuates. That's kind of what we're going to see with Deshaun Watson. And when we can make that decision of, is it worth drafting him here at this point? QB 3 for me, nothing more. From a dynasty standpoint, let's talk about this super quick and let's get into a listener mailbag here. From a dynasty standpoint, where did he move in the dynasty rankings for you in the quarterbacks rankings? Because for me, he had been in the QB 12 to 15 range, and I had just been continuously like shuffling him up there.
Yeah.
Like we would get some positive news. Okay, he goes up. All right, we get some negative news. Okay, he goes back down. Where did he land for you now, knowing that he is only going to miss 6 weeks? And then moving forward, we've got Deshaun Watson, still only, what, 26 years old?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those players that for me has one of the biggest differences in redraft versus dynasty value. In redraft, I'm looking right now, and I've got him as my quarterback 26, like sandwiched between Zach Wilson and Baker Mayfield, a bunch of guys with question marks. Whereas in dynasty, I've got him pretty high still. I've got him at quarterback 9. I've got him just behind, you know, some of those names like Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson. But I've got him along with a bunch of other guys that are good mobile quarterbacks that have question marks, Jalen Hurts, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, you know, players like that. So I've got him in that range simply because we know what he is when he's playing football. He's a top 5 quarterback when he's playing, whether right, wrong, whatever your opinion is on it. Once all this has passed him and he's just playing football, statistically, he can be very, very good. And I think that's, if you're thinking of dynasty, long-term fantasy value, that's how you have to look at it.
For me, in dynasty quarterback rankings, he landed at QB 10 for me. So right there with you, as far as Deshaun Watson, not bumping him back into that top 5 territory yet. There's a lot of other guys that I feel very, very comfortable with above Deshaun Watson. Because again, like you said, we do have a lot of questions still with Deshaun Watson. All right, let's move into a listener mailbag. I think this might be the first listener mailbag that I have done on the podcast here, and we're over 50 episodes in. So I'm excited for this one. If you want to submit a question for future episodes for the listener mailbag, head over to the Discord. Go over to the ffplaybook.com right there on the main website. It's going to be a link that says jump into the free Discord, right? This is where I'm taking questions now moving forward. So listener mailbag question number 1 here. Who are your top value picks in the mid rounds? This comes in from JPL0219. Alfredo, I'll throw this to you. Mid rounds is kind of subjective. It could be, you know, round 4 on. It could be 6 to 10, however you want to quantify this. But I'll just throw this to you. Who are your top value picks in the mid rounds?
Yeah, so there's something about this year, and I don't know if it's just because we're not that excited about the rookie class, but so many rookies are falling into this area of just mid-round values for me. So I'm going to list off a couple. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about each of them, but I'm going to list off a handful of guys here, okay? So Drake London is being drafted as the wide receiver 37 right now. That's a guy you can get in the early 7th round. He's the wide receiver 1 on his team. there's going to be a lot of volume for him. And I think that's what you look for when you go for these mid-round guys, is players that can have a good floor, but then also just really, when you're looking mid-round or late, it's guys that have just a massive ceiling. Drake London is one of those players that, being drafted at wide receiver 37, is kind of crazy. He should be within the top 20 wide receivers and possibly even higher. Christian Kirk is another name that I like at wide receiver 41. And I know I'll probably get some pushback on this, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire, for me to see him going as a running back 28 in the early eighth round, it's a guy on a good offense, potential running back one, passing work. I love him there. Brandon Ayuk, great wide receiver, deep threat for the San Francisco 49ers, going at wide receiver 43 in the early eighth. And then a pair of rookie running backs, Damian Pierce and Tyler Algier, are going really, really late. I'm talking 11th and 12th rounds. And these are guys that could be the potential running back one for their teams. Granted, the offenses might not be good, but if they are getting volume at the running back position, that's not found very often.
Not found very often past like round seven, right? You know, like you mentioned Clyde Edwards-Helaire going at that point, and we don't even know what his volume is going to be. Right. With Damian Pierce, we know that he could be the RB1 here in this offense and see a ton of volume. For me, I did a podcast just recently last week with Hayden Winks talking about value picks in the mid round. So make sure to go back and listen to that one. I'll highlight two of them here for me. AJ Dillon is going in round six, round seven in some platforms there. I think that that is a ridiculous value for a guy that I would love to have as an RB2 on my roster, where we got the potential that he takes the goal line work here. He steps forward as the main ball carrier in this backfield, as Aaron Jones is needed more around the formation as a receiver. And then the added upside, if something were to happen, God forbid, to Aaron Jones, AJ Dillon could be a league winner for you this year. MVS, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, is the other wide receiver here, that, or is the other player that I'll mention here at the wide receiver position. Going in round eight, typically what we're seeing here, I expect that to rise as we start to see more and more positive news coming out from Chiefs camp here. He's going to be a guy that can bring you that added, that upside week in and week out in your flex. But if he does develop into more of a proven wide receiver, if he becomes that number one wide receiver for Patrick Mahomes, man, you got a ridiculous value there this year. So MVS there and AJ Dillon. All right, let's go with Oakman. Can you tell me your thoughts on Najee Harris and Saquon Barkley for this year? Quick thoughts here, Najee Harris and Saquon Barkley. Where are we sitting, Alfredo?
So I actually recently just did an article on Najee Harris for Football Guys, and title of that article is Why Najee Harris is Still a Top 5 Running Back. And for redraft, I love Najee Harris. I've got him right now as my RB3, and I know that's a lot higher than most people. Some people probably have him at 5, 6, 7, 8. For me, the thing is, you just look at his volume, and he's going to have regression to the mean for his red zone usage. Over the last nine seasons, we've seen that the Steelers love having a bell cow running back. This isn't a Najee thing. It is a Steelers thing. It's a Mike Tomlin thing. Steelers leading rusher averages 22 touches per game. Of those 22 touches, 4.5 of them are receptions. Okay. Could it be just be a Big Ben thing? Maybe. But even when he was younger, I'm talking nine seasons, the Steelers have always used their running backs this way. Najee was 22nd in red zone touches, 20th in rushing touchdowns at the goal line, 17th in carries from the 5-yard line. Basically, the volume is going to be king for him. If he's not a top five running back, it's simply because he got hurt. Or the other option is he just caught basically no passes and got even worse red zone usage. So for Najee, a lot of things have to go wrong for him to not be a top five running back. The volume is just there. I like him. And for Saquon, man, he needs to be healthy. There's nothing that suggests he won't be healthy. His injuries were unrelated. They were a little fluky. And I love the potential here with Brian Daboll using him in the passing game and in the slot a lot more. But the Giants offense, just a lot of question marks there. But I do like Saquon. I do like the value that he's still at. His ADP is starting to rise. The more videos that come out with camp, that ADP is rising for Saquon.
RB7 for me for Najee Harris. He's someone that I feel comfortable with. I don't know if he has the insane upside that, Derrick Henry, a Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon, Christian McCaffrey, these other guys that I have above him in the rankings, but as a very, very safe option that you can get later in the first round of your drafts, very comfortable with Najee Harris. Have questions about the receiving volume. That's the reason why he's a little bit lower in the rankings for me. Saquon Barkley at RB14 for me. Ultimate dart throw. Ultimate wild card is what I'm trying to say. Ultimate wild card this year, where we do not know what to expect from Saquon Barkley. You said it though. It all comes down to health. If he can be fully healthy, we know the talent level of Saquon Barkley. So he could end of the year as the RB1. It's in the range of outcomes. He could end the year as the RB36, or later. And it's in the range of outcomes too.
And that's the thing, man, is like Saquon is just so talented, right? Like everything, all this loss of his value has just been because he's missed games, because he was hurt. I still have Saquon as my RB9. because he's right there in that range of other guys. I mean, running backs get hurt. That's what happens. You can't just, you know,
right,
be off a guy forever because he got hurt one time or even twice, right? Like, that's why CMC is still going as a top two running back. So right. Saquon Barkley has that talent. I'd rather lean more towards talent than fear of injury.
Next question here from Go Between. Last year, I traded for Jaylen Waddle in a keeper league, and now I have him and Tyreek Hill. What do I do with one of them or keep both? I'll turn it over to the Miami Dolphins fan here.
All right. So yeah, the fan in me wants to say, don't worry, they're going to be great. They're both going to be top five guys. Tua's going to be awesome. And the Dolphins offense is going to kill it. Right. But you know, this is something that I think I had always shied away from. And the more I started to dive into fantasy football, I realized, you know, it can work. It can work where there can be two wide receiver studs in one offense. Does it happen all that often? Not really. You know, our buddy JJ Zacharyson, he did a study recently. And you know, to look at the numbers that he put out there over the last three seasons on a points per game basis, there was an average of five wide receiver duos that finished in the top 24 on a points per game basis for wide receivers, and then an average of nine that finished in the top 36. Obviously, with Tyreek and Jaylen Waddle, you don't want them finishing in the top 36. Like, that's not ideal. But if both of them can be top 24, I think it's within a reasonable range of outcomes for them. I think Miami's going to lean more on efficiency than they do volume. There's probably going to be a greater emphasis on the run game. But for them, it's going to be a lot of yards after the catch, and it's going to be what these guys can create on their own. And right. If there's two players that I'm willing to bet on that right. can create after the catch, it's these two guys who may potentially be two of the top three fastest guys in the league. Mike McDaniel's very creative. These guys are talented. You know what? I don't hate it. And I think it's very much from the realm of possibility that both of them are top 12.
For me, this all comes down to what's the target share for the other receiving options in this offense? Mike Gesicki, Chase Edmonds, Cedric Wilson, what's their involvement in this offense? Because I think that it is Tyreek Hill, it's Jaylen Waddle as the clear options there. But then after that, what's the fallout? What's the trickle down? And so I think if these guys have both above 20% target shares, which I think is in the range of outcomes, I've got Tyreek Hill at 9 and I've got Jaylen Waddle at 14. So I still feel comfortable with both of these guys producing because I don't expect Cedric Wilson or Mike Gesicki or even Chase Edmonds out of the backfield to take up a ton of volume. So that's the difference there. But again, like, you should feel very comfortable with both these guys creating after the catch. To go back to your question though, having both of them on your roster, I think it's, if those are your wide receiver one and wide receiver two from a fantasy perspective on your roster, that's a little bit risky where, you know, you might want to diversify just a little bit there. But if you've got another, you know, wide receiver in that range that you can feel comfortable with sliding into that wide receiver two, wide receiver one role, then on your roster, then I feel like you can kind of live with that range of outcomes. Let's go here to Schmidt Faced. Who is the last wide receiver or running back on the board that you're comfortable with as your wide receiver one or RB1? So looking at overall ADP, who's that last wide receiver where we start to get down that list where you're like, okay, this is kind of where this is the breaking point where I want to make sure that I get this guy before that tier ends?
Yeah, for me at the wide receiver position, it's Rashad Bateman and actually another guy, Darnell Mooney. They're both back-to-back wide receiver 27 and 28. That's about as low as I am willing to go at the wide receiver position, because so much of it is not just thinking of who is the top wide receiver that I'm getting, but it's who's following up after that. I do think there's a lot of value to be had at the wide receiver position, but these guys are wide receiver ones on their respective teams. So at their value, that's about as low as I'm willing to go.
For me at the wide receiver position, I think it's a little bit earlier than that. Like, we're getting into probably Brandon Cooks is kind of that last one that I would feel comfortable with as a wide receiver one. Allen Robinson, I would feel comfortable with as a wide receiver one on my roster, but that's still a little bit risky. I'm feeling more comfortable with that as each training camp report comes out on him though. That's kind of the range of, you know, ADP where I'm like, okay, I want to make sure that I at least get a wide receiver on my roster. Let's move on just for the sake of time here. In a 12 team Superflex redraft league, when do you start looking for QB2 and QB3? This one comes in from Tequila Mockingbird in the Discord. So in a 12-team Superflex, we talked about this on a live stream that you came on, you know, over on the YouTube channel. And we talked about where you typically looking to get that second quarterback, that third quarterback in a Superflex league. I'll turn this over to you.
Yeah, and then you did some mental warfare on me. You got me second-guessing myself on the live stream. I want to get my first two quarterbacks typically within the first 3 to 4 rounds. I mean, there's obviously there's always going to be the concept of be fluid and kind of let the draft come to you. But in a super flex, there's just such an advantage of having two very good quarterbacks on your team. So if you can ideally even get them in the first two rounds, and a lot of people, you know, use that strategy in Scott Fishbowl, despite the tight end premium stuff. I did that, you know, Tom Brady and Dak Prescott, it works.
Yep.
When it comes to the QB3, I tend to want to have the rest of my roster filled out a little bit more, be a little bit more confident in them. I think that, you know, once you start to get into that round, maybe round 8 might be the earliest, but I think it's more like a round 9, round 10 type of deal, where you could still snag one of those guys like a Jared Goff, a Davis Mills, someone who doesn't have to be great, but he can fill in if one of your players gets injured or you need him as a bye week fill in and still be serviceable from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, for me, it comes down to like 7th, 8th, 9th round. That's typically where I'm looking, but it more so comes down to who's still there on the board for you. Yeah. Like when you get into that territory of, you know, is your QB3 going to be Carson Wentz or Mac Jones, Jared Goff, Davis Mills? Like that's a little bit more risky. I would prefer to take that QB3 at least a little bit earlier than that, getting a Tua Tagovailoa, Matt Ryan, maybe even throwing that dart on Zach Wilson. So that's kind of looking at the ADP queue. That's typically where I'm looking to grab that QB3, is looking at that tier. Final question here. What is the pick to have this year in the first round? I have the 9th selection, and I have opportunities to either trade up or trade down in a PPR league 12 man. This one comes in from Zach 10. So where are you looking to draft this year, Alfredo, from a position standpoint? Is anyone kind of standing out to you?
Yeah, you know what? I think that there is kind of a good group towards the end of that round one on that turn. Just looking, you know, right now at ADP, and you know, seeing one of the guys I'm high on, Najee Harris, going 10th overall. Seeing Travis Kelce still there at the end of the round one, round two turn. Joe Mixon, CeeDee Lamb, who I think could have a massive breakout this year. DeAndre Swift. There's some really good value at the end of that round one for you to get that round one, round two turn. I really like it. I despise the middle of the first round. Being stuck there like pick 5, 6, 7 sucks. I hate it. That end of the first round, though, some awesome value there.
Typically, I've been saying that middle part of the draft is typically where I prefer to live. This year, I'm really liking the players in ADP that I can get around that turn. So whether you want to take the, you know, the 101 and then you can come back around, and you, of course, you're getting Jonathan Taylor, or in a super flex league, you're getting Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, however you value that. But at that other turn, like you said, there are some very, very nice players there at that 1-2, but then even further down the board, like the players that at 3-4, you know, at 5-6, like you don't feel like you have to reach drastically, which in previous years for the players that I like in those rounds, I felt like I had to reach and kind of set those runs. I don't feel like I have to do that so much this year.
Yeah, you know, something like to what you're saying is there is so much of just a mental aspect of it, right? So many of us go into these drafts thinking, okay, I'll just follow my rankings or whatever my cheat sheet says, right? There's a mental thing where you start to reach because you, oh, that guy's not going to be available in another 12 picks. But when you have that turn, you're looking at picks and you're like, okay, well, I can get this guy and then I can get this guy 2 picks later. And there's almost like an easiness to your mental state at that point. So I think you end up drafting a little bit more confidently.
All right, that'll do it for today's episode. Remember, if you want to get in on listener mailbags moving forward, jump into the free Discord, theffplaybook.com, right there on the main page. You can find a link to jump into the completely free Discord. So jump in there. It's a community of over 750 people that has grown from 100 to 750 here this month. I can't wait to say at the end of this month what that number is. It's a ton of fun. Make sure to jump in there. Alfredo, thank you so much for jumping in. Remember to check out the Fantasy Playbook Dynasty podcast hosted by Alfredo Brown here. You can find that wherever you are listening to podcasts. Episode 1 is coming out here very, very soon. Alfredo, thank you so much. Remind people where they can find and follow you on Twitter. And of course, what you got coming up on the Fantasy Playbook Dynasty podcast.
Yep. So you can follow me on Twitter at the Pretend GM. That's what we do in fantasy. We all play pretend GM there, right? And then coming up on the podcast, Kyle, you're going to be the first guest co-host, the first official episode of the Dynasty podcast. We're going to be doing a mock draft, Superflex mock draft to, you know, keep those juices flowing, man. There's a lot of people finishing up their startups, and we got a lot of great content coming to you in the preseason here for the Dynasty show.
Absolutely. All right. That'll do it for Alfredo Brown. I'm Kyle Yates, and we'll see you next time. We'll be right back.